show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And you don't have to check your headset. That voice you're hearing is, in fact, me, Jeff Herr, your host. I am back. I have returned from the land of Father. I guess I'm still in the
You're
land
still...
of Father and will be for the rest of my life. But I have had my child, and my wife was gracious enough to say she would watch her for a little bit while Mike and I got on and recorded another show here. Big thanks to Craig and Ben and Hunter for subbing in for me. Did I miss anybody? Were those the only subs, or was there somebody else?
It was just them.
Just
yeah.
them. Okay.
Yep. We
big
didn't
thanks to them.
Didn't break anything.
All right. Big thanks to them for subbing in for me while picking up my slack as I got used to fatherhood. My little one is just about to hit 3 weeks of age here, and she's doing well. And no offense, Mike, but as fun as this podcast is, fatherhood is may have it beat. So
are you sure?
it's got its frustrating moments, no doubt, especially in the early going here.
I would imagine.
Compared to some stories I've heard, the lack of sleep could be worse. My daughter's been really excellent and has allowed me to get somewhere between 4 and 5 hours of sleep a night. So I'm counting myself pretty lucky in that category. And she's super fun. And she's only going to get more fun, and I can't wait to take her to her first Royals game, which will probably be not till next season, but maybe at the end of this season she'll be in that six-month range, but probably wait till next season. Anyway, enough about me. Mike, how are you doing on this unseasonably warm February day? Or not February, March. It's March. Good Lord.
It's early
That's
March.
What happens.
Yeah,
That's
good figure.
Motherhood. You start losing track of what day is it? I don't even know. What time? But it's March, but still unseasonably warm.
Well, my first presidential campaign has not been going very well. I have not won any delegates.
Ooh, that's rough.
For either party.
You had my – so I apologize that it didn't work out for you.
Didn't hit the threshold, so I fired my campaign manager, which is myself, and have suspended my campaign pending further reflection.
As they say, there's always 2020.
Right. Maybe. I might live in Canada, depending on how things go.
That's very possible. I'd be rooting for the Blue Jays next year. That would never happen. That wouldn't happen.
I'm just kidding. No matter where I lived, I would still root for the Royals.
But we actually have some Royals news here. The big news this week, of course, as if it wasn't enough for the Royals to lock in Alex Gordon with a long-term contract. And this isn't quite the same, but because of what his previous situation was, but Salvador Perez signed a new contract. Basically, it guaranteed the option years, increased the money given to him for those option years, with a little bit up front as well, and kind of pumped up the salaries in between. In total, was it basically a 5-year, $52 million contract? Is that those the right numbers? Those are the last ones I saw.
It was 52.5.
Yeah, of course. But those were Salvador Perez. He's going to be here through 2021 now. And so you've got, you know, this, we keep bringing up that 2017 window, and Sal Perez is always going to be here, but you know, now he's going to be happy. Cause I think the concern was that if he's here past 2017 and he's still making $1.5 million a year, he's not going to be happy about it, cause he's going to be worth a lot more. So the Royals did the, and this is what we'll kind of get into, but I'll say it up front. The Royals made what would probably be looked at as, on a scale of poor to really good, a poor business decision, or at least closer to the poor side. But in terms of a humanity decision and a, you know, what the Royals organization strives to be, they made a very good decision. So just to kind of give my quick thoughts on it is kind of what I just – to echo what I just mentioned there. But as a fan of the Royals, as an organization, and a fan of that kind of, you know, optimizing every little bit you can, every dollar spent, every at-bat, every inning, optimizing all of that, I wasn't necessarily – I'm not necessarily pleased from that side of me. But the other side of me – that absolutely loves Sal Perez and thinks that he's invaluable to this team. He's a great person. He's great for the community. He's great for the organization. He's going to be an all-time great Royal no matter how long or short his time is here. Even if it doesn't show up statistically, which it probably still will, but even if it doesn't, you know, he's going to be remembered that fondly. So that side of me, which is admittedly a bigger side, is incredibly happy. Sal Perez has absolutely earned more money than he's been paid. And that's part of what the Royals are doing here. They're kind of giving him money for time served, if you will. And, you know, the Royals, they, in like you and I terms, they took a risk back in 2011 when they signed him to that contract for $23 million total or whatever. But in baseball terms, the risk was basically non-existent. $23 million over, was it like 7 years or whatever, is nothing for someone who basically, if you get a year and a half that's good out of that seven-year window,
you paid
for it.
Totally
worth it. So and he didn't, you know, he didn't have to sign the contract. He did. The Royals had absolutely all the leverage in this scenario. Sal Perez didn't. I don't think I've ever heard of a baseball player holding out. You hear about it in football all the time. It's a little bit different scenario there, and their players union is a little bit different. Major League Baseball players union is they don't operate the same way. They're a little bit stricter in how they handle things, and I don't think that the MLB players union would allow a holdout. So I don't think that was ever something that was ever actually going to come to pass, even though it was threatened, kind of vaguely threatened, I should say. But it's all in the past now. It doesn't matter. Sal Perez is getting his money. When you really look at it, the 2020, 2021 salaries are going to be like $13 million, and the Royals are going to have a new TV contract by then.
Yep.
Baseball salaries are going to be so inflated, it's going to be ridiculous. There is a really good chance that even if Sal Perez is a 31-year-old in 2021 even if he sharply declines, $13 million still might be a bargain for what Sal Perez gives you, just because the astronomical way that that baseball salaries have just ballooned. So overall, I think business decision, you don't necessarily want to lock yourselves into the type of player that Sal Perez is, which is a below 300 on base guy, big framed catcher who hasn't had any injuries yet, but has a lot of wear and tear so far and could have injury problems in the future, and not certain what happens if that goes, you know, when he reaches that Joe Mauer stage. You know, Mauer was able to move to first. Can they do that with Sal Perez? Is that something that they can do with him? We don't know. Hopefully he can stay healthy and be catcher for the remainder of this contract. That'd be fantastic. But it's kind of tough to – you don't necessarily want to lock yourself in. But in terms of what Sal Perez means to the city, the community, the team, the clubhouse, and, you know, you already heard Eric Hosmer make a comment after, you know, that he'd be open to you know, he wants to stay in Kansas City. And it's easy to say when you know you're Eric Hosmer and you know the Royals
right.
Are for you. And so nobody's going to blame him for saying, oh, well, the Yankees offered me $50 million more. I can't turn that down, but I wanted to be here. You know, I mean, it's easy to say. But at the same time, like, I do believe there's an element of truth in there where, all things considered, if the offers were close and or somewhat close, you know, Salvador Perez being here in Kansas City would help tip the scales for someone like Eric Hosmer, and maybe someone who's not even with the Royals yet, but who knows Sal Perez and has respect for him and sees how the Royals treated him and those things. So there's a lot of good things that come with this contract. that aren't necessarily going to translate into the back of a baseball card. So overall, if we're to pull up that same scale, on poor to very good, or at least, you know, in terms of my mood after the contract, it's closer to the very good. I think it's good all around. It's not going to hamstring the Royals. If the Royals are hamstrung by $13 million, which would have been what, $6 million more than what he would have made anyway in 2021. If they're hamstrung by that in 2021, they got bigger problems. So, I really don't think that it's as bad as it might seem to look at it completely objectively, but the good far outweighs the bad, in my opinion, in this one. I mean, what were your thoughts when you first heard the news?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed at a certain point that once it started being discussed like every week for the last month, it was like, all right, something's going to happen here. And like Craig and I last show, we talked a bit about this, that I was more okay with it than Craig was. Craig was kind of, you know, thinking far ahead and thinking about, okay, well, he's a big catcher. He's had a knee surgery already. He's had some concussions in the past. They play him all the time. And I think Craig on Royals Authority posted a little table that showed like innings caught over the last couple of years. And Perez is like 700 ahead of the next closest catcher. And it doesn't include postseason. So, I mean, he's like 900 ahead of whoever's in second. And, you know, so those are real concerns. Those are real things to be worried about, because we've seen Perez's offensive numbers decline every year. He's, you know, still a gold glove guy behind the plate, but, you know, there are catchers that are considered to be better for their entire catching game. And so it's not like he's the elite guy. He's kind of regarded as such among a lot of baseball guys, but
I did see something from, sorry to interrupt, but I did see something from ESPN that said, ESPN Stats and Info, that said he was essentially in the top five in every meaningful category, for not every meaningful, in like a slew of categories across the league, not just American League, but across all of baseball. So, just to your point of there definitely are some catchers that are considered. He's definitely in that top tier.
Yeah. And you know, he's going to be an all-star all the time, and he's always going to be in that conversation, and, you know, wildly popular and everything. And that has its own kind of value. But, you know, overall, when you look at it, it's, you know, just over $10 million on average per year, which isn't really that bad. And, you know, $6 million of that is a signing bonus. So the payroll hit isn't as great as you kind of think it might be. And so when you compare it to his old contract, it's just like, it's far and away. It's like, you know, the Royals were so, so far ahead on that first contract. You know, I mean, it was originally guaranteed at 5 years, $7 million. I mean, that's crazy. That's like where you look back in you know, 1994, or, you know, maybe 93 is a better example, you know, where a guy signs a contract, and that's like one of the top contracts of the free agency period. It's like, okay, that it seems so small now, but, you know, this year he was originally slated to make $2 million. Actually, he's still making $2 million this year. Just for comparisons, I mean, like Brian Dunsing last year, minor league signee this time for the Royals, but he made $2.7 million last year as a lefty specialist out of the bullpen. So you compare that to a guy like Sal Perez, who's an all-star catcher, you know, those salaries should not be the same. So when you look at it from, you know, this moral standpoint, from doing the right thing, it was probably the right thing for Sal to make up for kind of what he's done so far since signing that deal. And Dayton Moore said that he's overperformed the contract, which is absolutely true. You know, but at the same time, the Royals didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to make that change. It's similar to if Fox Sports Kansas City said, hey, we want to renegotiate your TV deal early. It's like, that is not going to happen. I mean, maybe the Royals want that to happen, but it's not going to be a thing that happens. They've still got to wait a few years for that. So you know, I think you do gain something by keeping Perez happy. I think it does show everybody that, hey, we're going to take care of you. And you've already seen that the Royals are kind of a destination team. There was an article out by Jesse Spector on Sporting News, I think he's with, where they were talking about kind of that, you know, the training staff, but even like team chemistry and stuff. And you know, guys like Chris Medlin came here because, you know, they have a good relationship with Dayton Moore, and Peter Moylan signed minor league deal, you know, had maybe better offers, but wanted to come to the Royals, and Chris Young wanted to come back to the Royals, and Alex Gordon said he couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And so, you know, there's something to that. I mean, it doesn't show up on the box score, but there is something that at this stage, I'm prepared to just accept it. I can't measure it, but you can definitely see that there's something within the culture in Kansas City that really does seem to work for these guys. And this is the kind of thing that works along with that, where, hey, it's Sal Perez. He's, you know, one of the faces of your franchise, and they're going to take care of him. Now, if that means that in 3 years he's got to move to first base and he still doesn't get on base very often and the power starts to dwindle, yeah, it starts to look like a pretty rough deal. But, you know, they're also going to get his peak seasons wrapped up and probably at either under still or close to market value. I mean, he's even in 2018, he's going to be, you know, 28 years old there. You know, $7.5 million. I mean, based on just wins above replacement and that value at that stage, that's going to be less than a win, you know? So does he give you that? Yeah, I think so. Plus, you know, merchandising and ticket sales and goodwill and things like that. A lot of things that maybe aren't, you know, the biggest factors, but they kind of matter a little bit. So it's the right thing for them to do for Sal. It's not the best thing. You know, they didn't have to do it from a business standpoint, but there's also a value in keeping your people happy, making sure that they're taken care of. You know, another thing I thought of briefly was I heard a podcast on, I think it was like a TED Talk or something, where this guy was talking about nonprofits. And well, nonprofits, a lot of the most successful ones really invest in their people. And even though, you know, you're a nonprofit, the ones that invest in their personnel end up being able to make more money overall in the end for their organization. And so I guess in a way that kind of might apply here, you know, success measured quite differently, obviously, on a baseball team versus a nonprofit. But, you know, it's the same kind of idea. Invest in your people, take care of your people. And not only will more of them want to stay, like maybe Eric Hosmer or, you know, maybe Lorenzo Cain, but others might see that and want to come here as well. So there, you know, it might be a trickle down thing that works down the line. But it might also be something that in 2020 is really tough to swallow when Sal Perez can't run anymore. Mm-hmm. Because he's caught 150 games over the last 4 years. but maybe that means that they want to protect him and play him less and get a different backup catcher. So maybe it works out that bumps up his offensive performance. We don't know. I mean, it's going to have to play out and we'll see how it goes. But, you know, it's a really good PR win. They look great as far as, like, you know, the fans and things like that. It definitely kills the cheap narrative. The everybody goes to the Yankees narrative. That's gone. That was gone, but you can't even pretend anymore. It's just like that's done. It's done. And so this is just another guy that they've been able to keep. And Dayton Moore's really made that kind of a focus over his entire tenure. And so, you know, maybe he'll continue it with other guys.
Yeah. So I think that's probably all we need to say about that. We'll make this a really quick show. Mike and I both, Mike and I have a super secret project that we've been working on.
Right.
So we spent some time on that tonight. So we're not going to spend a huge time with the ship, but we will hit on a few things from spring training. Number one, we'll go with Kyle Zimmer. So Kyle Zimmer is kind of like the of this new era of Royals baseball where we pay less and less attention to the prospects, Kyle Zimmer is still the one that people know. He's the guy, probably because he was drafted in 2012, kind of at the tail end of the Royals, the down times, if you will, and then 2013 was the first winning season, and we know the rest, but the first winning season in a while, and then we know the rest. But he is the guy that they thought maybe by the end of 2013, and they thought 2014 he was going to help the team, got injured. They thought 2015 last year he had a good shot at helping the team. He was injured. So he's kind of always been like, well, he's uber talented, but he cannot stay healthy. And we talked to oh my God, drawing a blank.
Jim Callis.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim Callis. Good Lord. I'm telling you, it's fatherhood.
You need more sleep. Yeah.
I do. Jim Callis, and he talked about how, you know, if you asked him 4 years ago in the draft, you know, who is the one guy you would project to be, you know, the most durable, the best pitcher, you'd have Kyle Zimmer would have been his choice, I should say. And you read things about when you talk about the Royals' top prospects that when healthy, when in good, when he's at the peak of his game, he may be one of the best top pitching prospects in all of minor league baseball. But the fact that he's injured so often and it's so unclear what his future will be in terms of how many innings he can throw in a particular season, he gets downgraded quite a bit, as he should. And so this year, I don't want to say make or break, but it's very pivotal year in the the history of Kyle, or in the lore of Kyle Zimmer. And so far, the returns from spring training have been pretty positive. He pitched, was it yesterday, the day before?
It was yesterday. He got the first start of spring training. So worked the first two innings against Texas. And I didn't get, spring training game, tough to see those, so didn't really get a chance to actually see him, but sounded pretty good. He threw 28 pitches, 17 for strikes, got two strikeouts. He gave up two hits, but one of them was wiped out on a double play. Seemed to be in command. The Royals afterwards sounded really optimistic about him. And I think it was someone was down there. JJ Cooper, I think, was down there from Baseball America, and he was, he said that Zimmer was working about 94 to 95 with his fastball, and the curveball looked good and stuff. So it's that whole what if he can stay healthy, maybe there is something. They'll probably have him in AAA to start, and who knows when he'll come up. But, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that maybe he ends up carving a spot if he's really, really dominant. I think it's unlikely. But,
right,
if he performs, that's all there is to it. He's somebody's, 20, how old is he now? 25?
He's 21 in 2012 when he was drafted.
It's hard to keep track.
And that's the thing. This is another scenario where the Royals are primed to, over the next 3 years, three seasons from 2016 going to 2019, the Royals are kind of primed to have these pieces kind of drop off here and there and have somebody new kind of slide in. So, one of the pieces here is you've got Edinson Volquez, who's only under contract for the season. Maybe the Royals sign him to a 1 year deal for 2017 and, hey, let's keep this train moving type of deal. But maybe not. And then if Kyle Zimmer steps up, maybe he comes up June, July, August in that time frame. Maybe he works in the bullpen. Maybe he's a spot starter, something like that, helps in another playoff run. And then he's ready to take that role that Volquez had in the rotation, not necessarily as the number one starter that Volquez is going to be this year, but, just the spot in general in that starting five rotation. And then, we've talked about it before, Mondesi kind of, hopefully in that Escobar spot. And then, Chester Cuthbert, maybe he's not definitely one of the top, well, he's one of the, probably one of the top 10 Royals prospects, depending on who you look at, but, he's not, a Mondesi caliber, but regardless, so there's kind of a lot of these. And another one of those besides Zimmer is another kind of big piece of spring training so far, which is Bubba Starling. And Starling, and you know, myself included, it's been really negative the last few years, rightfully so. He has right. not shown much to really give you anything to be positive about. But starting about mid-season last year, or you know, he was pretty consistent through most of the year, but Starling had a pretty solid year, pretty solid to good year in the minor leagues last year.
It was better.
Yes, for Bubba
Starling. That's all that you're looking for to an extent is, hey, it was better. There was actual sign of progress and
exactly.
adjustment.
And that's something we hadn't seen. We had not seen signs of progress in the past couple of years. So yeah. it's good that we saw that last year. And the early returns in spring are that he's making good contact. He looks more confident at the plate. He looks more comfortable at the plate, which was the bigger issue, was the comfort level. It's just from what we've read and what we've heard and things like that. So he's another guy that maybe not this year. I highly doubt he gets any time this year, more than, you know, a cup of coffee in September if he has a really good year. But 2017, I think the Royals are banking on Bubba Starling being an opening day type of guy. So, you know, and I think they're trending towards that, and I think they think that he's trending towards that. Is that kind of the impression you get as well?
I hope so. I mean, it's God, just they sound, you know, they're saying the right things, and, you know, he's definitely going to get a bigger look this year in camp than in other years. You know, I remember last year in spring training, he started out like 0 for his first 15, and like 12 of them were strikeouts. And it became a thing. It was just like, okay, cool, he struck out again. So like,
yeah, one of those Twitter things where it's the Royals aren't even playing and someone just randomly tweets, Bubba Starling just struck out again. One
right.
those
just,
types of things.
Just, and, you know, he's 0 for 4 to start out now, but it's, you know, it's the second game of spring training. You know, not really going to worry too much about spring training numbers. Haven't gotten a chance to see him in these games yet, but they're going to be on MLB Network tomorrow night. So maybe that's an opportunity. I think that they probably want to see him up this year, either September, maybe August. I don't know if he really like rips up Omaha. Yeah. Maybe they'd go a little faster. I don't know. But yeah, by next year, I mean, they've said it multiple times that, he, you know, even a year ago, 2 years ago, defensively, he's ready to play in the big leagues. And today he made a good catch. I was working, so it was tough to listen to the game and actually like process it. But he threw a guy out at home. You know, he's got the speed, he's got everything but that contact. And if that contact ever comes around to any kind of average level, then he's going to be a worthwhile player. If it doesn't, then he's, you know, going to get maybe that cup of coffee and you never see him again. So, you know, the Royals definitely hope that he's going to get to that point. And if he does continue to progress this year, then yeah, maybe he will, you'll get a better look in, say, right field or maybe even center field. I don't know, this season, with an eye towards opening the year next year. So that's the hope, and the Royals sure sound optimistic about it. He's still got to do it, and I think it's still fair to be really skeptical about Bubba, just because, you know, he hasn't shown enough yet to get any benefit of the doubt. But, you know, guys bust out at strange times. I mean, he's getting into the territory where Lorenzo Cain started to, you know, get some notice as a prospect. And even though Bubba was a number 5 overall pick and Kane was much lower, you know, it's still, development is development. It's, you know, it's not necessarily going to follow where you were drafted. It's just going to be something that happens when it ends up happening, if it's ever going to happen. So, you know, I think the Royals at this point would take that development no matter when it happens, as long as it's A, happening, and happening with him in their uniform.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking for a route for Starling to go I think, like you mentioned, Lorenzo Cain, that's kind of what you want to see, because Cain was similar but even different in that he just didn't play baseball until later in life, whereas Starling just wasn't as focused on baseball until he got drafted and made it his sole sport. So I think that's a good hope for Starling, what he could be if he continues to progress, because as athletic and as amazing as Lorenzo Cain is, Starling may even be more so. I mean, the dude is just an absolute freak athlete. And if he can put it together, and that was what the thing was when he was drafted. I remember we had Jason Parks on the show afterwards, kind of giving a rundown of his thoughts. And he said it was a big gamble, I remember. But he also said that if it hits, then you're talking home run MVP caliber type player. Doesn't appear he's going to be that way 5 years later. Right. But – you know, that was the absolute ceiling, and no, very few prospects reach their absolute ceiling. So, you know, if he turns into being a 2 or 3 WAR player that gives you Gold Glove defense with a 250 average and maybe hits you 15 to 20 home runs, then, you know, 3 years ago we would have been happy with that from Lorenzo Cain. That's what we were hoping for, and then he's turned into what he is now. So, if that's what we get from Bubba Starling, then I'll absolutely take it.
Yep. And Lorenzo Cain debuted when he was 24 years old. Bubba Starling in August will be 24 years old and will probably make his debut shortly after. So he's kind of on the same track. And, you know, it seems like he's been around forever. He and Jorge Bonifacio and Cuthbert, and those guys, they've been around forever.
Brett Eibner.
So it's just like, okay, you know, they've been around forever, and we know them because we followed them in 09, 2010, 2011, et cetera. You know, now they're starting to kind of reach that point where they're going to be contributing to the big leagues. And I guess that works into the last thing that we want to cover, unless you had anything else on Bubba.
No.
All right. Well, good. We'll get to more Bubba easily throughout the year. But Jerrod Dyson got hurt in the first game. Strained oblique. He's going to be out 6 weeks. That should include the rehab assignment to kind of get back up to speed. No pun intended. So that leaves the Royals with probably, 6 weeks from now, you're looking at middle of April. So probably about 10 to 15, you know, maybe 10-ish games that they'll be without him, assuming there are no setbacks. So that does leave an opportunity for somebody like Paulo Orlando or Brett Eibner, like you mentioned, to come up and maybe do something. You know, maybe they make the team out of spring training when they otherwise wouldn't have. Maybe they take to the big leagues. So those are, you know, some of the ramifications of that injury. I don't think it's going to be a big enough of an injury that the Royals go out and sign anybody else, but Austin Jackson is sitting out there waiting for his phone to ring, so that could be potentially, unless he's signed with the Tigers. Cameron Maben broke his wrist and he's at about the same amount of time, so it's possible they might have gotten a reunion with Austin Jackson in the time that we're recording. But you know, that's, unless they really feel like, hey, maybe this is an opportunity to go try something different with right field and actually bring in somebody else, you know, you'll probably see Jerrod Dyson back out there at the end of April as kind of the primary starter with Paulo Orlando splitting time. But you never know. I mean, guys like Jose Martinez or Brett Eibner might step in and light it on fire. I mean, Orlando was really good when he came up out of nowhere last season. And, you know, all the triples, but he also had, you know, a few homers too. So, you know, that might be an opportunity that these guys run into to start the year and in the first couple weeks. So that's kind of the intriguing thing to watch right now, other than the fact that, hey, they're playing baseball again.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, those guys have an opportunity. I hope one of them grabs it. As much as I like Jerrod Dyson, I would love nothing more than, you know, Brett Eibner hit 450 with 5 home runs in spring training. The spot's his. You know, he's opening day starter at right field, and, yep, and hopefully he can have some success. You know, I would love nothing more than to see something like that happen. And then, when Gerard Dyson comes back and he's at full strength, that's one of them good problems, you know?
Right.
So, and that's, you know, thankfully the Royals, problems that the Royals have had recently have been like that, been one of those good problems. So I'm totally okay with that and worry about how Dyson fits in when they get there.
Yeah. I mean, they'll find something. And if you
Dyson's
end up
a part of this team. So if, even if Fred Ebner is the hottest man on the planet in right field, Gerard Dyson will still be on this team. He's too important.
Oh yeah.
For what they want to do. And with his clubhouse presence to not be on this team, he'll be on it. So it's, he's not losing anything.
Yeah. He's not going to get Wally pipped unless it just ends up that he ends up going back to the same role that he always had of defensive replacement, pinch runner.
Yeah, and that's what starter. I mean. Like, even if Ebner is the secure starter because he's playing so well,
yeah,
Dyson's still going to be that guy.
Right.
That's what he's excelled at the last couple of years. That's made him a very valuable player. So, no problems there.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the best way to use him. But at the same time, he's also put in a lot of his time, and you know, it's nice to see a guy like that get a shot, and maybe it is something that turns into a bigger deal. But it's just going to be delayed at this point.
Yep.
But, you know, yeah, he'll be around.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, with that, I think we'll leave you again. We said it was going to be a short show. So we've kind of hit on the pertinent stuff. And as we keep moving forward here, we'll keep having more and more stuff to talk about. Hopefully better things than talking about an injury to someone like a Gerard Dyson. But
hopefully no injuries to anybody.
Yes, hopefully. That'll be something that we'll just have more and more stuff to talk about as we get closer to that opening day World Series rematch on Sunday Night Baseball. Cannot wait. Until then, we will we'll keep pumping out these shows when we can, and hopefully every week I can get back on the schedule now that I've we're a little bit more comfortable with having a tiny human completely dependent upon us for every living thing.
Figured it all out already. It only took 3 weeks.
We got it. Boom.
We're done. Right. Wins college.
Yeah, exactly. Right. She's out mowing the lawn right now. So, we'll stick with us. We'll keep having shows and get ready for another exciting Royal season. So, for Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates. What if you're looking at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I want to challenge just one of those players, not the whole team? Most fantasy sports services don't allow this. But now you can do that on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can take Bryce Harper against Mike Trout, or you can take Eric Hosmer against Freddie Freeman. Creating a challenge takes seconds. Accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public, and you can create them for Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started in a real money or $0 challenge. Visit nohalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. You can also receive a bonus by entering promo code Royals at sign up. That's at No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. Anytime's a great time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn, but March is packed with good times. Stop in for a beer and the multiple TVs tuned to the Big 12 or NCAA tournament throughout the month. Or maybe you're looking for some liquid encouragement before the Westport 4-mile run on March 12th. Kelly's is open at 10 a.m. for runners and spectators alike. Grab some pizza from Joe's in the back to replenish those calories you burnt off running or watching. And you can celebrate St. Patrick's Day the way it's meant to be done, with a pint or two or well, drink responsibly, starting at 10 a.m. on the 17th. But if you can't make those days, any day will work. You'll get the same great service that's made Kelly's Westport Inn a Kansas City tradition since 1947. With live music on the weekends, drink specials, and an open rooftop for those warmer days and nights, it's always a good time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn in the heart of Westport.